welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and respect is what you always get. Education, information is where the Progressive Radio Network leads you. Gary Noel has put this program together, and we continue to bring in new information to help you in your future lives. Today, what we're going to focus on is higher education. And we have our guest today is Dr. Nicholas Osborne, Nick Osborne from the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Nick, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Appreciate being here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's fantastic. I mean, it's been a long haul. You and I met a few years ago when you were the Veterans Coordinator here as a Dean of Students at the U of I. And now you're Acting Director for the new, brand new Center for Wounded Warriors in Higher Education, aren't you?
That's right.
Wow, what a change. That's kind of exciting, isn't it?
It's very exciting. It's amazing how fast things precipitate on campus here. And as you said, I moved here about 5 years ago from Northern California, and it's just been wonderful to be a part of the Veterans Initiative on campus here at Illinois.
Well, you yourself a veteran. You're a veteran of the U.S. Coast Guard. You're an officer in the Coast Guard, correct, Nick?
That's correct. I was formerly enlisted, and then I went to OCS and got out as a 03 lieutenant.
Isn't that wonderful? A whole bunch of us Mustangers, what we call Mustangers.
That's right.
Gives you a whole entire different perspective. And then you also, not only that, you got out, like I did, you went on to finish your PhD, didn't you?
That's correct. I have a doctorate in higher ed administration from the University of California at Davis.
Well, that doesn't get any better for where you're into right now, does it?
Absolutely.
Well, tell us about the University of Illinois. I mean, I'm a graduate of U of I and retired from the University of Illinois. But what does University of Illinois is obviously one of the great universities in the world and in the nation. It's got one of the greatest libraries in existence. In the U of I, I mean, back at the end of World War II, this is where they started all disability awareness and disability training at the University of Illinois, didn't they?
That's exactly right, Doug. That in the 1940s, Professor Tim Nugent was working with transitioning World War II veterans. And I don't have the exact data, but I recall at the end of the 1940s, it was nearly 70% of the entire student population were veterans, and many of them had served overseas in World War II. And what he was doing is he was actually putting together things like ramps with plywood and salvaged wood in his garage at home so that buildings could become more accessible to World War II veterans who were in wheelchairs. And then eventually what happened was that our work in research and disabilities continued to excel and expand and eventually went beyond just military populations. And so we're a world leader and a national resource for working with students with disabilities. And the Center for Wounded Veterans in Higher Education, where I work, is also a part of the College of Applied Health Sciences, which essentially oversees all of the disability resources here on campus.
Well, that's pretty exciting. I know I was at the dedication a few weeks ago and looking at this building where it used to be an old house a long time ago.
Right.
It's all incredible changes. Well, right now you have, before you became acting director, you also were coordinating all the veterans on campus. How many veterans does the University of Illinois have on campus now?
It's a good question, and I would say we're somewhere between 350 and 375, and then we have about another 130 to 150 dependents that we also work with here.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think the important thing to emphasize, Doug, is that there's a lot of emphasis right now in higher education about connecting with veterans, but not necessarily veterans with disabilities, which I think brings in a whole other layer of need and support. And that's really what the center is positioned to do, is to work specifically with that population who's obviously vulnerable for purposes of retention, for persisting and making progress, and then ultimately learning how to manage their disability, living independently, completing a degree, and then finding some sort of new mission or purpose through career and employment.
It all can be pretty important. I mean, when we look at what's happening, I mean, looking at the veterans, we got a whole group of people coming in back into school, either enrolling as undergraduate to get their bachelor's, a bachelor of science, a bachelor of arts, or whatever. And then also you got the individuals who get the opportunity to come back to graduate school. So the University of Illinois, as one of the great universities in the world, has that opportunity where people can do both their bachelor's, right? They can do a master's, they can do a PhD, they can do a law degree, or they can become a, veterinarian or an MD or any of this.
And the amazing thing about that, too, is that so most veterans are eligible for various pools of financial support through the VA. And so the post 9/11 GI Bill is one, the Montgomery GI Bill, but then within the state, we also have the Illinois Veterans Grant. So depending on what a student veteran is looking to accomplish here, hypothetically, many of them can go on at least to the baccalaureate level, if not beyond that, and graduate virtually debt-free, which obviously in our current times with the student debt crisis, it's quite an investment and quite a boon for our students to not only excel academically and start to make that transition into civilian employment, but to do so without the burden of debt.
I know that's extremely important because once you get into debt, trying to get out from underneath it is just a real problem. Well, say, I mean, when we're looking at, I mean, like right now, a lot of vets, they're looking at vocational training. They might go to a trade school. They might pick up one of these, I don't know how you want to put, for-profit schools that are online.
Sure.
But there's really no substitute, is there, for coming to a major college or university and participating directly in the class, whether it's the lecture or the laboratories or the internships? I mean, there's no substitute for that, is there?
I'm biased, Doug, but I would fully agree with you. And the reason being is I think that part of what the student veterans we work with are going through is just an adjustment to leaving the military, leaving a structured environment, and now being in an environment that's more self-paced. And so I think that being around other peers and having that human agency is so important. And I think also just for the broader campus, it enhances our diversity, and it enhances the college and classroom experience. I mean, if you are a 17 or an 18-year-old traditional student, and let's say you're taking a public speaking class with a veteran who may be 25, that veteran may have had some very unique experiences since high school. And so I think that it actually elevates the classroom experience for all students.
Yeah, I know what it did for me. I mean, it gets pretty exciting. Well, say, for example, an individual wants to go to school. Obviously, in the military, you've got the enlisted individuals that may have finished high school. Some may have a little bit of college. You've got the officers that already have a bachelor's degree. How does one go about getting seeking admission to the University of Illinois, and what does it take?
So that is where we definitely are different than a lot of schools, and particularly the schools that you mentioned earlier, the online exclusively and the for-profit. So we definitely have a rigorous admission standard. Most of our veterans apply as transfer students, and some of them have had previous college experience either through a community college, or some of them may have attended a four-year school for a while, dropped out, and decided to enlist in the military. So what we do is either through the center or through our Veteran Student Support Services Office, what we do is we essentially break down what that process looks like into manageable parts. And we emphasize to the student veteran how important it is to really share what they did in the military, some unique background experiences like deployments or being a non-commissioned officer and having supervisory experience. All of these things stand out very favorably. And then once they're here and enrolled, we have a transition course that I developed and that I teach. And part of what we're doing is laying that foundation in terms of giving them the skills and resources that are going to allow them to be academically successful.
So, I mean, we're looking at a major university. So when the veteran comes here, obviously their academic career or what they did in high school is critical. And when I go and look online, I mean, normal admission requirements as a regular student, you have to have 4 years of English, 3 to 3.5 years of math, 2 years or four, 2 years of social sciences, 4 years are recommended. Look at lab science, at least 2 years with 4 years recommended, two years of foreign language, and then obviously your flexible academic unit. So that's kind of your basic high school criteria.
Yeah, that's true. And what's interesting is that it's all across the board. We have primarily STEM majors in terms of our veterans. They're clustered more in science and engineering backgrounds. But we also get a lot of students who just said, you know, I wasn't really college-bound or college-interested while in high school. And so if we have applicants that don't meet our admission criteria in the beginning, we have other options like a pathway program with Parkland College, a local community college, or if the veteran applicant is out of state, we'll work with them in a community college that's close to their home to give them that support, those resources, so that they can build the academic foundation and then transfer here at a later time when they're more ready.
Well, I know Parkland College, here at the, which is also located here in Champaign, Illinois, that's an incredible junior college. I mean, I've taken a lot of courses here, and students that I had that came from Parkland to the University of Illinois, I mean, they excel because they had that one-on-one professional development, academic, you know, preparation that they needed, and they just took off and started hard chargers.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that it's a wonderful resource. It's also very financially affordable, and so it's a great fallback plan for the veterans that we work with who, for whatever reason, aren't ready or who aren't admitted to the U of I.
So there's all kinds of opportunities. I guess the main thing, and when I look at my own academic education and all the other veterans that came through the years, the U of I really totally prepared them, because when you're an undergraduate or you're in a graduate program, either one at the University of Illinois, you're involved in a top-notch program, so your opportunities to participate with faculty and get involved at local, national, international levels within your academic or chosen field is, I mean, it's wide open, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many things to choose from. And part of what we try to do early on with the student veterans with disabilities that we work with is we want to unpack what it is that they did in the military and to see if that's something they want to continue with in terms of an area of interest. We also help them with like instruments such as Myers-Briggs career inventories to help them isolate different jobs of interest where they have natural aptitude. And then as we unpack this, we start to look at what does the long-term plan look like? So not only just with an academic major and minor, but what types of internship experiences do we want to develop and gravitate the student toward? And what does this look like in terms of a job at the end?
That's where it's all headed to. Is, I mean, everybody wants to have a job, and they want to have a job where they can continue to pursue, you know, their life goals and objectives.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that it's that new sense of purpose and mission, which is very much a part of that transition. The military was great for X period of years in my life, but now I'm ready to do something new, and I'm not quite sure what that is. And that's where I think the center is in a very great position to, again, provide the one-on-one, comprehensive, and individualized support that so many of these returning veterans need.
And I think that's what's extraordinarily important to look at, because you've got the whole gambit. I mean, ever since, 15 years since 9/11 and all this other stuff, but we go back to Desert Storm. So we have a lot of military personnel right now that are either enlisted or an officer, but because of the cutbacks and the forced drawdowns, now they've got to go find another career. So they might have been in the military for years or retired, but now they got to go out and kind of, okay, what's next?
Exactly. And that can be, especially if they're trying to manage a disability or a brain injury or things like that, that can be such an overwhelming task. And also, I just think that it's important to add that when they're transitioning to school, we have to be very realistic about, in terms of, are they ready for a full load of courses? You know, 5 courses for a new student veteran, particularly one with a disability, can be a lot to handle, especially if they have these other health issues that we need to address. And so these are the types of questions that not just the University of Illinois, but all higher ed, in terms of my peers and at different conferences, when I attend these conferences and these roundtables, we're all sort of sitting with these ideas of how do we communicate this message and really address this unique population with all of these comprehensive needs.
Well, Denise, I mean, one of the reasons I brought you on here is because your medical knowledge and everything, and having taught at the university and been working in academia, the veteran today, the student, the veteran that's coming out, they got a whole host of physiological and psychological medical problems, don't they, Denise?
You know, they do. And one of the things I think about when universities set up these, you know, whether it's a room or what kind of facility that, you know, the veteran students can gather in. And one of the things that may be missing is, you know, someone to coordinate and get the VA materials out there on display so that if the students haven't checked into the VA, that they've got some directions, some pamphlets to use. And I think about the older veteran students, too. You know, we have excellent things for the post-9/11, but we still have to consider our veterans, like from Desert Storm, that still may be coming to colleges and doing things. And we think about their health problems, their, you know, and PTSD. And I just think that there needs to be coordination with any university setting up an office, that they also get supplies, materials, printed off from the VA website. I mean, one of our things is that our Gov4 vets don't know that they can get referred to the War-Related Illness Center. You know, and there's pamphlets out there that could be out there in these student centers to help them in case they're having medical problems, to know that there's different registries, materials, you know, even a bulletin board, and, you know, if you can get some of the flyers, have them out. Because, you know, we have to grab people where they're at, is what I say. And so I look around as that is a need, not only in the VA facilities, but where veterans are in greater numbers. And with the post-9/11, we had the burn pits. There's a burn pit registry. And, you know, I just want to be sure that the universities are helping in any small way to get that material out in front of the student veterans.
You know, I think one thing's important. I know, Nick, the stuff that I've seen when I'm looking at your programs and discussing them with you, today a lot of the veterans from Desert Storm, post-Desert Storm on, they have a lot of neuromuscular problems. So mobility is a real problem, and this may be visible or it may be invisible.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we have to be concerned with, I guess, and this is, again, we're so important with your work and your efforts here to coordinate all this stuff. A university campus, whether it's a U of I or Western Illinois or University of Colorado, or it's I've actually spoke out the University of California, Davis, years ago. Maybe you were there
right.
When I was out there. Who knows? You might have.
Yeah.
You know, but the campuses are huge. And so mobility is one of those things that's really critical. So if you have a class that's in one building and then you got 10 minutes between classes and you've got to chase the other end of campus, first off, you have to figure out, how am I going to get from here to there? But then the other thing, and this is, I guess, where your program can be so important, you can coordinate the classes such that the student has the ability to get into the classroom and then meet all the needs that they have in there. But I guess that's what the Division of Physical Rehab has at the U of I. I mean, they focus on that specifically, so it makes a big difference, doesn't it?
It does. The accommodations are so important. And, for instance, this semester we had a young veteran, and she went to her Spanish class, and she walked in, and there were 350 students, which is not uncommon for a large public university freshman class. And she sat there, and she just immediately started to panic and have anxiety. And so when she came back, we were able to meet with her, and she's working right now with one of our clinicians, and they're working on an accommodation letter. But these are the types of things that come up, and they show themselves in so many different ways. And I just want to tie into an earlier comment that we have VA staff who also are embedded within the center. And I think that that's so important, and I fully agree that we really have to meet and identify and reach out to this population in any way that we can, because they do have a tendency to isolate. And I think that the collaborative process of the VA and higher education coming together is a necessity. And so it's been great for our students. If we're working through something on the campus side, upstairs we have somebody on the VA side that we can immediately escort that student over to and start addressing those other layers and those other stressors.
Yeah, that's really critical, because I think the scary part about this, I know when I came back, I mean, I was finishing my PhD at the U of I, boohoo, years ago, we went to Desert Storm, and I literally came back out of the desert, came back out of a nightmare, and walked right back into the classroom and back into my regular job at the U of I. But it's an entirely different lifestyle I mean, there's no really way to describe and compare your lifestyle in the military to your lifestyle on a campus, is there?
It's exceptionally difficult, and part of that is the break in education. There is oftentimes a confidence issue about returning to school and being able to stay afloat and excel. The disability piece, managing an acquired disability, which is sometimes very new ground for these students. And then there's also the tendency to commute to campus because most veterans opt to not live on campus, which can also degrade them from participating in more campus-based activities that we find our traditional students being a part of. And I'd say the last point that's important is the relationship to their younger peers. I mean, every semester I hear it in different ways. They'll say, you know, I'm in this class with all of these 18-year-olds, and I just don't relate to them. I don't relate to the petty stuff that they're complaining about. I'm married with two children, and I spent 5 years in the Marine Corps, and here I am now in this class losing my mind. So those are the types of things that we have to be very mindful and sensitive to.
Can I ask a question? On the campus and with your student veterans, you know, we have Veterans Day coming up, and is there any interactions that y'all are encouraging between the veterans and the civilian student population?
I'm sorry, my phone was breaking up. Can you please repeat the question?
Yeah, with Veterans Day coming up and with what you just mentioned, you know, with veterans fitting in and, you know, the differences, you know, during Veterans Day time period, are y'all doing anything to promote, you know, veteran interaction with the student population, you know, anything special that your university has scheduled to maybe increase conversation and communication between the veterans and the civilian students?
It's a great question. What we do and what we've done in the past is we've done a series of student veteran discussion panels on campus, and part of this is to address a lot of the assumptions that the civilian populace has about this group. And then through for Veterans Day, we have a celebration for our students, which is just more of a pizza party. And we also have a month-long veterans display that showcases the history of the University of Illinois' military relationship, which goes back to our land-grant beginning. And so what it does is it allows for the greater campus, both veterans and civilian students alike, to sort of see this rich military tradition. But I believe that more intentional programming is so important to help break down a lot of the barriers that certain veterans feel coming to campus. And what I mean by that is, quote-unquote, the idea that this is a liberal campus and therefore it's anti-military, or that because you served in the military, you automatically have post-traumatic stress or that you've killed people. And so these are the things that we always want to address, and particularly with the faculty and staff, to ensure that the classroom environment is one that's respectful to military students.
I have one other question. Is I'm sure you have a history department and audiovisual type departments, you know, teaching students on that. Have you started a program there to record the veteran history? You know, because there is the Congressional Library. You know, they're collecting all these history from the older vets and the younger vets. I'm wondering if you've thought about integrating that with the student population, student courses, to have, you know, students do this, earn credit to, you know, be interviewing the vets, be part of this larger national program.
We did participate a couple years ago with the University High School for the Veterans Oral History Project, and it was just this beautiful event where several of our students were interviewed and shared parts of their narrative. And then there were also community veterans that were involved, and then they made a CD, and we hosted it at the public library with about 65 different people from the community in attendance. And we had representation from different wars, including in peacetime. And then more recently, I had a doctoral student who served in the Army as a captain, And he and I are looking at ways to put together a veterans narrative group where essentially we would meet on a regular basis and talk about our service under certain themes, like what does it mean to be authentic in war? Or what does it mean to be heroic? And funnily enough, the chairman for the National Endowment for the Humanities is going to be at the center tomorrow as part of his campus visit. So we're looking at a lot of the different types of initiatives and grants through the NEH because I feel that this is such an important and powerful piece for not only our student veterans, but for our greater community as a whole.
Yeah, and connecting, you know, with the programs that have been out there, you know, that the high schools and the high school teachers being critical to this effort to, you know, have high schools inviting veterans in and doing talks with the students, you know, sharing their experiences. And I think about the teachers and how that could be blended into a program. I'm just throwing out ideas as it comes
to
mind.
No, it's a great idea. It really is a great idea. We work very closely with a lot of our community-based veterans groups like the Marine Corps League and the VFW and the Military Officers Association of America. And, you know, I feel that if we are going to create a lot of this transformation that we envision, you know, for lack of sounding corny, we have to offer healing as a community. I think that that's so important, and I think that we saw the result of that, or lack of, rather, with our Vietnam veterans, and that it's so important that not just for a campus community, but for our community as a whole, to show that support, appreciation, but to also develop greater understanding about this group.
You know, another thing, too, I think, and it goes back to history and all the way through, when we all back, both Denise and I were Vietnam era and everything, and Desert Storm stuff, we're still involved in academia. Whether you're coming in academia or you're in your civilian life, all these problems have been associated with your life and your military, whether it's something, what they call PTSD, or I'm not even sure that it really exists, although it does in different forms. To all your experiences, when you come out, you have this tendency, if you get another stressor, and the college students have done this historically forever with the drugs and the alcohol, and the military have done the same thing.
Yeah.
How can we get around that? I mean, all of us have been emphasizing, I know you can, Nick, you and I have both talked about, Denise and I, we've been at the forefront. How do we get the student, the new student, the vet, to understand that they can make it through and excel at all this stuff? And they don't have to go back and rely on alcohol or drugs or anything else, you know, street drugs, to kind of like get by or whatever thing. I mean, part of the university life with these young kids is, well, I'm going to go drinking, boy, we're going to get wasted. And then they forget, well, what about academia?
Yeah.
I also think about, you know, your university being training teachers and those that are going into law enforcement, and the beautiful interconnect that could be done by a university in so many areas, not just, you know, the teacher education that you may have at your university, but any of the programs leading into military law enforcement or medical type field, and having this interaction occurring with your veteran students and opening the door to the community. What we saw after Gulf War, and, you know, continue to see it, is we see horrendous law enforcement things happen. And a lot of law enforcement are prior military, some of them are not. But, you know, the training that the law enforcement gets to deal with those situations as they come up, even if it's a well person check that we do with veterans, if we know somebody's having problems, via, you know, a potential suicide by cop, these are things that happen throughout the nation. And thinking of how we might improve that, and I know we had one of our vets who unfortunately has died, one of our Gulf War vets that was kind of a leader, Steve Robinson. He really went out and tried to activate in different states the training of policemen into the situation of these suicide by cop, PTSD, you know, problems that occur in the veteran population. And just thinking how a university could be more interactive with their community and with the education in those career fields. I don't know. I'm just throwing out a lot of ideas. I don't know what your university has done, but I know that there's that lack of connection and trying
yeah.
to build more blending
and
thinking
agree.
It through in different colleges within a university of, you know, bringing up the discussion. You know, how can we gain from our veterans and gain their history perspective? How can we, as we train professionals at the university level and they're in this coursework, what can we put in to different programs that emphasizes, you know, the veteran experience and how better we can do in each of the educational fields, be it, you know, education of teachers, education of healthcare providers, mm-hmm. education of, you know, military law, I mean, not military, but law enforcement. You know, I see so many potentials to develop more.
Yeah.
To bridge that gap, because the more you do that in different programs and you've got veteran students, the more the communication is getting out there to the community.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think that we have a great, very proactive university police department, and they, when we opened the center, they assigned actual officers who became sort of our liaisons, and so they pop over. In fact, one was over this morning, and they interact with students, and they build relationships on the grassroots level, which I think is just really important. And I think it has to be a continuous, it can't be a one and done, as we say. It has to be where they become more embedded into the culture. And it goes back to a question that you asked about drinking and drugging a few minutes ago, Doug. And for me, my experience is that we have to create authentic bonds with our students in a community. Otherwise, all of these resources, they don't come together into forming a whole. And what I mean by that is you can have career support for veterans, you can have transition support for veterans, you can have all these different resources, mental health counseling for veterans, but all of these strands have to come together in some cohesive whole. And the students have to feel without question that we have their best interests at hand. And I think that by creating that type of an environment, what I've found, like through our transition course, is that when students start to feel connected to each other and connected to the center, they're much more likely on their own terms to come to us and say, you know what, I think I'm ready to meet with somebody about what I think could potentially be post-traumatic stress, or about this disability, or about these concentration issues. And the reason I think that that's so important is we have to remember that military culture is a culture that, by and large, has taught them to hide all of this. We don't want to hear about your problems. We don't want to hear about this and that. And so a lot of these students have learned to suck it up and drive on, as they say. So we have to create that environment where they legitimately feel that we have their best interests at heart so that they can start to ease in and share some of these deeper issues with us.
One of the things I want to bring out is when our Gulf War veterans from 1991 came home, it was interesting that we had a lot of our military that, you know, take courses in their off time, if they're Reserve Guard, whatever. And they're in the middle of their school, and they have to pull out and come back. But what was noticed in this group, and might be being noticed with the OEF veterans, is that the college professionals, professors, spoke out from Texas. I heard about it from Texas, as they were noticing that these students that they had known before they deployed and when they came back, they were having problems. You know, if you gave them, you know, a pop quiz or something, they did well. But when it came to end of course finals, they noticed there was a significant problem. And they started identifying, and the wives were speaking out, of these cognitive memory problems that started out early. And, you know, how instrumental that can be for a group of veterans if it's documented and, you know, they're trying their best, but there is a noticeable difference from prior to their deployment to after. And, you know, if you identify that and start helping the veterans identify it, we are able to assist the veterans quicker as students and getting them into, you know, the registry at the VA. And not only that, but what a rich environment for the college professionals and professors if they're identifying this as a group to have it written up and published. You know, nothing was ever written up, you know, out of what I heard was happening when people came back and resumed trying to get their educational degrees. And that's the sad thing. There was a missed opportunity there that could have benefited so many people.
Yeah,
Nick, one of the things I'd like to go over here, and it's kind of, I pulled it up here as you're, you know, maybe you were involved, I think you were involved in writing the Veterans Getting Started Guide, which, I mean, it's applicable to the University of Illinois or it's applicable to anything. So I guess the first thing is, and you've already mentioned it, go out and find out where your aptitudes or interests are in, right? And there's all kinds of tests that you can people can talk to help you with that, correct?
Correct.
And then the next thing to do is find out what school you want to go to, is you can, and then you can apply for admission. Mm-hmm. And then you got undergraduate or graduate programs or professional programs. I mean, to me, the military personnel we have come out are wide open for any of those admission programs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you got to get all your test scores and transcripts together. I mean, with the military work, that's a big problem, isn't it? I mean, normal MOS or AFSC or whatever your job in the military, that doesn't translate into academic credit most for the most part for the university. Now, Denise and I have been involved, and I don't know if, Nick, you were. We were both involved in teaching that for many, many years. And normally what we'd look at is, you know, the whole time for MOS training, that'd be basically the equivalent of one semester of a college course. I mean, the difference in the rigor is so tremendously different that I'm not sure people understand that.
They don't, and I think, unfortunately, particularly in the Big Ten, that there's a culture that if you sort of, quote-unquote, cheapen the degree by giving military credit, that it's a bad thing, rather than, I think, the way we want to look at it is how do we build and recognize and acknowledge the experiences that this unique population has. And, you know, when you have a student who was an NCO, a non-commissioned officer, so typically an E4 or an E5 or above, chances are that they've already been engaged in a lot of leadership and supervision and public speaking. And I think it's a matter of unpacking that and giving legitimate credit that they can actually apply toward their degree. And that's something that we've started here at Illinois looking at more closely, because we are one of the more conservative schools in terms of what we allow and what we actually give credit to. And just wanted to jet back real quickly on something you said, and I think that part of what we also have to look at is how active duty provides the TAP classes or the transition assistance program, but many of my students have shared that it's hit or miss. Some have a great experience and many others do not, and oftentimes it's more career focused and not really designed with applying for school. And so I think that applying to school for many veterans I've worked with is sort of a last-minute rush. And I think that they need more time. They need more preparation to determine what it is they want to do, if a community college is a better starting point than a private school or a four-year school. And I think that this conversation needs to happen on the military end with more intention at least 6 months before the service member is discharged.
I know back
in Vietnam,
go ahead, Denise.
Yeah, I think about what he just said, and I reflect back to TAP courses, but I think a critical area that I know they're still doing is, you know, Reserve Guard Unit, military, you know, they may have family days, and what a beautiful opportunity to have the universities out there you know, a table, a display, you know, sharing the information not only for the military active duty reserve guard, but also for the family members. You know, and I never, as you were talking about it, I was trying to remember our family days, and we'd have things on display sharing, you know, our military duties, you know, go through a 130, you know, have little displays up. But, mm-hmm. you know, I was thinking, I never saw any colleges or universities participating in that once-a-year activity that could be so valuable to start at that point.
I think what I'd like to, and again, this is my personal experience, and Denise, I know it's yours, and Nick, I'm pretty sure it's yours. The military veteran that's gone through whatever duration of time of service and had the education, the experience, and everything, they've got this concept developed where they've got a commitment they can follow through on everything, and they've got some more individual discipline. And I guess a perception I have is even if they come out and they might not have the academic qualifications immediately to get enrolled, they can go pick those up fairly rapidly. And my experience has been the veterans and all these veterans, once they get into the program, whether it's undergraduate or graduate program, they really do well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we have about 25% of our first-year veterans who make the dean's list, and our attrition, I think, is better at, in terms that we lose fewer students than our traditional students. But, you know, part of that I wonder is because we are more of a STEM-based university, are we attracting a certain type of veteran per se? Many of the students we work with were college-bound out of high school but decided they wanted to go in the military for whatever reason. So it's tricky for me to look at this population, but then I have to compare it with sort of the greater pool.
Yeah, the U of I is always, I mean, it's one of the foremost universities in the world, and definitely number one in the state of Illinois. And, I mean, you got the Indiana, and, you know, you got Northwestern, but we're all the way up there. So I know your average high school student is not going to even look at the U of I, much less be considered for, you know, enrollment. But yet your vet can come out and, so as you said, start at a junior college or go to a, you know, one of the other universities, and then get enrolled based on their academic goals and career objectives. So it's and there's a lot of pathways you can follow. But it seems the key thing is what you got to do is make the decision to do it, and then the resources are out there. I mean, what you've been describing during this radio program has been incredible resources available to the veteran that just makes the decision. Hey, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to ask for help, and I'm going to make it.
Exactly.
You know, I'd like to ask a question because it may be a dumb one, but besides the University of Illinois, is there, you know, the professional associations over all universities, and I'm sure there's meetings, is there any focus at those meetings of, you know, sharing information between universities of what they are doing so that they can share and gain from each other in the veteran student population?
That's a great question. I feel that one thing that I've been blessed to experience in the time that I've been here at Illinois is working with partner schools is that we compete at a lot of things, right? We compete in football and we compete in ratings and stuff like that. But with this population, if we have something that is working here, the first thing I want to do is kick it over to Michigan or to Ohio State and vice versa, because we want to make sure this stuff is benefiting as many veterans as we can benefit. So NASPA has a knowledge community for veterans, and they have an annual meeting that I've presented at the last 2 years in a row. I feel it's a great place for networking. It's a great place to engage in those conversations that many of us are sitting with. And then within the Big Ten, we have the CIC. So we meet once a year, all the Big Ten schools who are working with the individuals who are working with veterans. And then we have different types of PowerPoint slides or programming ideas and initiatives that we're constantly emailing back and forth to share with each other.
Well, I think we're about winding down here. But I think, Nick, and I think this is important for everybody to think about, not just related to the University of Illinois, But the resources are out here incredible. I mean, just the people that I've introduced you to, the people you've introduced me to, the people we've been able to introduce to the veterans as they come through, that's really critical. So if they're going to be successful, it seems like all these resources must be made available, identified, made available, all these vets. And kind of like you said, a huge effort of all of us to help them get through and make it, because we never know what the impact is going to be of this future student that went through. And, you know, God almighty, they could be president or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to say in closing, Doug, that I think some of the most important pieces that I try to share with others is work with your student veterans organization. Most schools have an SVO, which is a chapter of Student Veterans of America. So this is essentially student veterans who meet on a regular basis, and they're great for giving you ideas about climate, campus climate, types of issues that veterans are encountering. And then we integrate student veterans with all of our decision-making. So we have a committee that I chair. They're a part of that. They're helping us do research right now through focus groups and surveys. But to really work collaboratively with your student veterans organization. And another part is veterans time and time again have shared that they don't want to be pitied. They don't want to be coddled, and they don't want to be singled out in a way that makes them feel emasculated or put down or degraded. And many of them talk about this sort of, I'm either a hero or I'm a ticking time bomb spectrum. And so, again, educating your campus, identifying other representatives on campus through admissions, through financial aid, and really building your team that way, I think, is important. And the last part is investing in them. That's what they want, is they want us to give them these tools, to give them that support, and then allow them to just build the palace and the home that they want to build for themselves.
Wow. I'm feeling good about this. This, you know, anytime you look at this, you're trying to figure out how it's going to work and what's going to happen, because, you know, previous history and everything, there have been total successes and there's been total failures. And I guess with the frustration of the veteran today, as we all know, and we know it all too well from our friends and our coordination, that poor veteran that doesn't have a future, doesn't see a future, and he hits a frustration level and gives up, you know, we got to prevent that at all costs, and that can happen to anybody.
That's right.
If we give the resources and the availability to them, I think we can pull everybody around.
I agree. I fully agree. And it requires a lot of hands on deck with a lot of different specialties that we all bring something to the table.
Well, how do they contact you guys at the University of Illinois, Nick? You want to give the contact information?
Sure.
We'll make sure and put it up on the website. But give it.
They can go to our webpage at www.woundedvetcenter.ahs.illinois.edu, or if they Google University of Illinois Center for Wounded Veterans in Higher Education, and my contact information is on that site as well. And our telephone number is 217-300-3515. And so we encourage and welcome anyone who has questions or an interest to contact us, and we'll go from there.
Well, fantastic, Nick. This has been really good. I'm glad to have you. Let's keep the coordination going. Denise, Nick, you two can get together, and I mean, incredible resources here. Kind of like if we open all the resources we know what's available and share them, we're going to really help these vets.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's been an honor to be here.
You know, I think we have to, you know, think multi-directional here. If you're not only helping the veterans, but you're helping the community of your students attending and the greater community around each university. And, you know, I keep thinking about, you know, different things I've mentioned of, you know, teachers, teacher education that goes on in the colleges and within a university, and how we can really build greater pathways to understanding and utilizing each other's knowledge base, ensuring that in the university surrounding, be it a nursing program, be it educational for, you know, teachers, or mental health professional training. There is just a dynamic here that I can see that has not you know, come to full participation across the country, and it would just be very dynamic, I think. You don't just think about what you need to provide to the veteran to help their transition, but how the veteran can communicate and have a significant role within each college and in the greater community. So that's, you know, kind of what my mind's been thinking of as we've had the discussion today. And I've actually learned a lot more about how this is being communicated to other universities, and it's fantastic. Thank you.
What about family support, Nick? I mean, if you got the veterans coming in, obviously you can have some young veterans that without a family, and then you have other veterans that are coming back that have an entire family behind them. What happens with their, I mean, is that wide open for them also?
Our center also provides support to the student veterans' family. And I think that it is important because, obviously, if they're coming back from, if they're Guard, Reserve, coming back from deployment, recently leaving the military, there's so many things like budget, for instance, changes in benefits, if there's anything related to their deployment, such as combat stress or trauma, but just simply leaving your family for a year and coming home and trying to figure out, all right, where are we now, you know, after this long separation. Those are all things that require a lot of specific care. And so we have a clinical psychologist as well as different workshops and groups that we provide for both the students and their families.
And what about housing? I mean, obviously, you've got regular standard campus housing. If you're an undergraduate and you want to live into a dorm, you can do that, or you can get an apartment or a house in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have family housing, I know, at the campus, University of Illinois.
That's right, out there.
Now,
at,
you have something really, I mean, really unique in the center. Could you describe that?
Sure. So we are we have three stories here at the center, and our top floor is an actual designated residential space for our student veterans who are accessing services here and who are enrolled full-time. And so we have residents that are there right now, and we're working on some financial support so that we can continue to lessen that cost. Our number one goal is to eventually have an endowment so we don't have to worry about money, particularly in a time right now where money is so tight. But all of our services that we offer are free of charge.
Yeah, that's really, really important. I mean, when the veteran comes out, and again, this is understanding, if you're just getting out of the military and coming back, obviously, you know, if you have a disability or something, you can get medical care for that disability through the VA. But medical care for any other medical problems that you develop or your family may develop, that has to be paid out of your own pocket from your regular health insurance. Now, do most universities or University of Illinois have a health program for the student, and is there a health program for the family members?
There is a health program, health insurance for the student. Regarding for the family, that I don't know. I would have to look at that more closely. One of the first things that we do when we're working with a student here at the center is we get them connected to the VA to find out what are the different pools of benefits, health-wise as well as financial benefits that they're eligible for, and especially if they're changing their status, going from active duty off active duty, or if they're going back into a reserve or guard status.
I mean, if you've retired from the military, if you've come out with a major disability, obviously, or medical retirement, obviously, you're going to have TRICARE, and then you'll have your VA. So that'll cover your medical needs and your family's medical needs if you have a family. But this other student that's just there, and I guess, Denise, you've been in this. What we have seen over the years from Desert Storm, Vietnam, and Iraq during Freedom, the guy could come out extraordinarily healthy, and then the stuff catches up with him. And that's not something that, you know, it's new, but that's what we're seeing. So, I mean, this guy was extraordinarily healthy or seemed to be healthy, but he's got a medical problem internally that doesn't develop right away. I mean, how can we, you know, again, that's something we have to be prepared for and whatever and everything covered so that they come out to the university and say, okay, well, I don't need the university health insurance. I don't have any health insurance. I'm going to rely on the VA. And what we've seen is too many people don't understand the VA only provides medical care for service-connected disabilities or medical problems.
Yeah, that's so true.
And I'm not sure.
I come back to this idea because I think about Michigan, and one of our Vietnam vets that became a lawyer. He teaches law at Michigan. He also has his private practice and all. But one of the things that I see a lot of universities developing in their law schools is the law clinics for veterans that help them with their claims or anything legally they need. What a rich environment for students to learn about VA law and other legal problems. And we have the veteran courts that have been established in many, many states now. Maryland just started, but we've had them here in Denver for quite a while. I think it was started in Michigan, I'm not sure, but we have to go back and pull that history up. But I think about that in the area of law and what's been done to emphasize veterans' needs on the campus, much less making it available to others, and in the process teaching law students and getting that going. And I think about, you know, the medical need and how a medical university system could help that.
Well, we've reached the end of our program. Nick, thank you very much. Denise, thank you very much. I'd like to continue this conversation. And Nick, as always, offer you any and all resources we can provide you and help getting the word out. And wherever you need from us, you know, all you know you have to do is call.
Let's do this again. I really appreciate it, and I honor both of you for the work you're doing and for your time. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks,
Denise. And God bless America and all veterans. Let's take off. Hey, Veterans Day is coming up, ladies and gentlemen. Go back and remember what it's all about. Take care and good evening.